Welcome to Off the Cut, a podcast where we talk about building, making,
and answering all of your questions.
And with that sound, the intro is officially dead. So we got a lot of feedback at WorkbenchCon that our intro needed to go. So it's gone.
It's gone. We're getting straight into the meat. So welcome to Off the Cut episode 105 for Tuesday. Man, 105.
105 is crazy, right?
Yeah. Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. And we want to continue to remind you that the worst podcast available on Apple and Spotify is, in fact, the Greensuiters podcast. Mm-hmm. But the best place to buy woodworking tools is...
Still KM Tools. Was last week, and it's this week as well.
I have a feeling it's going to be the best place to buy tools next week as well.
I think it might be. I think it's a little early to say. Like, I don't want to count the chickens before they hatch, but I think it might be. And you know why that is, Eric?
Why is that?
Because it's by woodworkers for woodworkers. If it's in their store, you know what? They should change it. Normally, the tagline is, if it's in their store, it's in their shop. But another word for a store is a shop. So you could say, if it's in their shop, it's in their shop.
If it's in their shop squared.
Yeah.
Because it's not a great woodworking pun, but I think you saw where I was going with that.
I do.
I thought it should be if it's in their shop or if it's in their store, it's on their floor, like the shop floor.
Oh.
But then that makes it sound like they dropped it.
Yeah, or it could insinuate the fact that he sells crappy tools, which he does not.
Yeah, that's true.
The only stuff that Jonathan sells at KM Tools or Cats Moses Tools is stuff that he explicitly designs himself with his team or has thoroughly tested to make sure that it's nice stuff. And actually, are we allowed to talk about stuff that he was showing us this weekend?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure he was like, don't share this just yet.
Okay,
none of that's...
I don't think it's out. But let's just say, if you enjoy making some of your own stuff, you're going to like what he's got coming out next. He's got some pretty neat things that are coming out soon. I'm really excited to get my hands on these. And he's got the new box joint jig.
Yeah, box joint jig. Looks sick.
But more importantly, what was that? What shows that where some guy's like, pointing?
Certainly.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't know. I imagine that's Three Stooges. I imagine that's what a New Yorker from like the 1930s sounded like.
Yeah,
that's fair. But more importantly, a portion of all the sales go directly towards the Cats Moses Woodworkers with Disabilities Fund, so we can get the tools in the hands of the folks who need it most. To get stuff in your hands, every single month we give away a $50 gift card to KM Tools. All you have to do to get entered to win that is sign up over on patreon.com/offthecutpodcast. You're automatically entered to win. Speaking of winners, tonight is when we draw. We're gonna draw it out, baby.
Oh, heck yeah. Are we gonna do it live on air right now? You got the spreadsheet all set up?
I got the spreadsheet set up. Let's How many do times this. Do you want me to refresh it?
I would like three refreshes and then a control Z.
Control Z? What?
To undo.
Yeah, undo. So, yeah.
How do I do that?
I don't know. You can just do three.
Now you're just confusing the hell out of me. Oh my God. Okay, hold
on. Put two on there for me.
Okay.
Oh, you got two in there? Hold on. Yeah. This is awkward. Now I got to find the damn thing.
You told me you had it ready.
I know. Okay. You said how many times?
Three for me and two for Derek.
One, two, three. One, two. And the winner this month is Joe Welsh. Hey, we had dinner with Joe.
Yeah, we did.
Joe Welsh at Delaware Valley Workshop. Hell yeah.
Let me write that down. Drink.
You what?
I never got his charger back to him. I think I owe him a drink.
I feel like Joe mentioned something about the contest at Workbench Con. Either wanting to win. I don't know. Oh, yeah, there we go.
There he is.
Yeah, he's in the comments right now.
Yeah.
Right on.
He just ordered from KM2.
Oh, no. Okay, Joe, what you're going to need to do is cancel that order. Then wait for the gift card to come in and then apply it to that one.
Oh, that's too funny. That's too funny. Well, Joe, stand by. We'll get in touch with you. We'll line you up with Jay Katz and his other guy, Mark, that helps out with stuff in the next day or two, and we'll get you all sorted out. And if they don't, let us know. Because I know
break their legs if they don't.
We'll make sure that it gets all situated. Well, with that, should we get right into it?
Yeah, let's get into it. So I think headline news article this week is that we all just got back from WorkbenchCon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think we really have to start with Derek's experience.
Oh, yeah.
He went in as the newbie. Right. So, Derek, please let the people at home, what was it like as a first timer? Was it intimidating? Was it exciting?
It was all the feelings.
It was all the feelings all at the same time.
It was like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, getting there, I was exhausted already, you know, waking up at 4:35 in the morning to get to the airport on time and then riding through the plane, getting, you know, waiting for Eric to finally show up at the airport so we could go to the hotel.
And then making wait for 30 minutes at baggage claim while we figured out how to get there.
You guys were in the wrong terminal.
Yeah.
But the first night I was just exhausted, so I wasn't very socially out there or anything. But as I worked my way, you know, up and went around and introduced myself to more and more folks, I opened up more and felt more comfortable, and I got to meet a lot of people. Got to meet some of the folks that really inspired my journey and me getting started and everything. Got to meet like Jimmy DiResta and Ann Briggs and you know, whole bunch of others. I do regret though, I did not get to meet formally. I did not get to meet our sponsor.
Jonathan
Katz Moses. He came over and he talked to us several times, but he was really quick, like making rounds. He was a busy guy, and so I just never really got a chance to talk to him. And then I got to meet Jason Hibbs very briefly. I caught him in a moment when he wasn't surrounded by a bunch of people, and I just walked over and introduced myself and then kept going because I was on the way somewhere else too. But it was pretty good time all around, I'd say. And then then Matt Outlaw I wanted to meet too, but he came in really late and then he left pretty quick too. He was one of those that was just really quick in and out, and I didn't get to meet him.
Yeah, his wife had like a camera. I think maybe they were doing some content on the something. Probably. He looked like he was rushing around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe he was there for the whole weekend or something. I think I feel like I only saw him on Saturday, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. That's the only time I saw him.
Hmm. There are certain very people different at WorkbenchCon who draw a crowd. Yes. I feel like Jason Hibbs is one of them. For sure. He's like, he's always got people kind of coming up to him, and it's hard to get a word in edgewise with some of these people.
Absolutely. And that's,
but fine. Derek, that's just, did you notice that the best thing that you can do is just go like, it's awkward. You're like, okay, I'm going to walk up to this person I've never talked to before. And I'm just going to go, hey, I'm Derek. That is the absolute best thing you can do at a place like this. And for me, that is so hard because I'm not the kind of person that just walks up to someone and introduces myself. It's so awkward for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I even had a few like bigger, obviously, you know, most of them are bigger than me, but a few rather large, like on y'all's size, content creators come up and introduce themselves to me out of nowhere, which was really nice and just really showed like how friendly and open everybody is there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, especially like if you're in a, you know, in a room or whatever, you're in a circle and there are four or five people and you don't know someone, it's not awkward to just be like, hey, I don't think we've met before or whatever. Like, I don't care how many followers you have. If we're all human beings here, like we're going to have a conversation. Like I went out to dinner. We went out to dinner with people that have no followers, and we went out to dinner with people that have way more followers than us. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. we're all here for the same thing.
No, no. We all know that the number of followers you have is your measure of worth as a human being.
The dinner train leaves and it's like, anybody over 100? Okay, you can come.
Yeah.
Oh, no, over 200, we're going to this restaurant. No, not at all. Not at all.
No, definitely not. I'm being sarcastic. Did it kind of live up to the way you imagined it? Was there anything where you're like, oh, wow, I didn't think that would be like that, or that was exactly the way I expected?
Well, I mean, just off the top of my head, it's kind of a silly thing, but, you know, I brought like a whole pocket full of stickers. And the only time I saw a sticker swap was whenever we first sat down to that first dinner, and I had left them back in the room. After that, the whole weekend, I'm carrying them around, and I barely exchanged stickers with anybody, which is fine. It's just, you know, you expected that, and it didn't happen. It was kind of weird. I guess it's everybody's kind of gotten over it now.
Yeah, I was going to say, with all due respect, golf clap to not doing sticker swaps anymore, because it just got overbearing and annoying. And to me, it felt like it would sometimes get in the way of conversation. Like somebody would join the group or whatever, which is fantastic. Love when people would just walk up to your circle and chat. Mm-hmm. But then it would do like this whole sticker swap thing, and it would like kill the conversation for 90 seconds.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being like, oh, hey, like I'm Eric or whatever. And you're like, oh, nice to meet you. And then continuing the conversation. Because at the end of the day, we're all there for the conversation, and the connection is what you're there for.
Yeah.
But I will give a counter argument to that. And it's kind of a weak one, but hear me out. A couple of times, smaller creators would come up to me, and it's just like a nice gesture. They'd be like, hey, I really like your channel. Can I give you a sticker or something like that? And it's almost quick icebreaker, just like a very simple thing.
And you were like, oh, I've seen that before.
Yeah, and that's true as well, because a lot of people aren't, like, especially on Instagram, some people just post photos of their projects that they're working on, or their face isn't in it too much. They're not like the most recognizable face, but there are some people, they gave me their sticker and I was like, oh, I know who you are. I've seen that logo before, or something like that. Right.
Oh, I saw you build this and this. I didn't know your face.
Yeah.
That happened to me a couple times. Somebody recognized my logo, but you know, obviously not my name or face.
Right. So that is the one counter argument I would say to stickers. But overall, I agree with you. I don't enjoy the sticker thing too much.
I think there's a tasteful way to do the sticker action. But it is what it is.
I guess that's kind of what the opening ceremonies really is for, is that time whenever everybody's first going together. I think that's probably where you would do it at. And then after that, you kind of let it go. I don't know.
Maybe it's like, you know, there should be like that mingler thing they have the first night or whatever.
Yeah.
The mixer.
Yeah. That could be the sticker swap time. And then after like that, no more stickers. Time. Yeah. Something like that. I don't know.
But overall, like, I mean, as always, I was talking to Keith last night. And we were both like, oh my God, we haven't like slept at all. We slept so much on Monday. And we were both just like, and I'd do it again next weekend if I could. I think the three of us and Keith stayed up every single night till at least 3 or 3:30.
At least. Yeah. Well, we closed it out. Well, and we actually helped the hotel staff clean up on the last night we were in there so late. Night. We could tell that they wanted us to get out so they could start their cleaning process. And we just felt bad. So we all just kind of hopped in.
That place was destroyed too. Like,
I know.
Why don't they just put like a giant 55-gallon trash can in the middle of the lobby? You know, people would just be like, oh yeah, I'll just throw this out here. There's no trash cans. That's the issue.
Yeah. Just bring in a dumpster.
Yeah. The only trash can is around the corner at the bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah. It's bad design. It's bad design.
And I don't think go ahead.
I was just going to say my one takeaway was, I think next year, if I go back, I'll go back a day early, so I can get a good night's sleep before that first night or that first.
Yeah,
night.
I think I would try and do that too, because I was with guys in the live stream that I think I got 12 hours sleep across three nights there, maybe.
Yeah. Well,
not only are you like, you're run down from traveling there, you get up super early to travel there, but then you're also up super late every night, plus you're drinking, which is going to destroy your sleep. So,
yeah. I mean, so for everybody listening, Zach and I, we shared the room. We would get back to the room at like somewhere between 3 and 4.
Yeah.
And then it was like, we'd talk for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. And then I was just like, all right, dude, I'm engaging the earplugs in. I remember doing that. And usually, you know, you kind of got to like jostle around with the pillow a little bit, get situated. All I remember is putting the earplugs in and then feeling my watch vibrate in the morning.
Yeah. 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 It was, and then I remember a couple times, I don't know if you guys, you probably didn't even notice, but there were a few times like I just slipped off to the room to lay down.
Oh, I did the same thing too.
20 minutes, 15 minutes, a couple of times. Cause I was like, I just need like, not even quite sleep, but maybe just a couple of minutes by myself. Cause you get overwhelmed in the crowd there.
Yeah, dude, I felt I'm sorry. I just read Suman's comment.
Talk. For 15 to 20 minutes, air quotes.
That was the running joke this whole weekend. As people are like, "Oh, Eric and Zach, you're sharing the same room. Who's the big spoon? Who's the little spoon?"
You know, it's funny. I just kind of assumed that everybody split their rooms with somebody else.
No one does.
Suman and Scott Wall share a room.
Yeah.
And then who was I asking? I was talking to John Cesarno from Lincoln Street. He was like, no, I just have my own room like an adult. I was like, oh, you can do that?
I didn't even think about that. Yeah. But then the thing is, like, how much time did we spend in our room?
Basically none.
Very little. I mean, I guess if you're like, I just want to come back to my room and just not have to worry about somebody, or if like, let's say you wanted to stay up to 3 or 4 in the morning and I wanted to go to bed at 10, that would have been a conflict.
Yeah, true. Well, would it? Because most of the time, like, you know, when you're staying up till 3 or 4, you're down in the lobby. If I wanted to cut out at 10 p.m. and just go up to the room, I don't think you would have minded.
No, I wouldn't have minded, but I would have felt bad, like, if I walked in the room and then woke you up.
Oh, no, don't worry about me. I'm a deep sleeper.
Yeah. But, yeah.
I snore like a lumberjack. Whoever shares a room with me is in for it. They're not going to get that sleep.
So let me ask you guys this. Well, Zach, you probably don't know because you were, you know, up, staying up late and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Derek, could you hear all of the talking and stuff in the lobby from your room?
No. Although the last full day that we were there, I broke out after lunch to go get a nap in. And just as I started to fall asleep into my hopefully 25-minute nap, they started doing construction down the hall. And it was just drill, hammer, drill, hammer.
Yeah. There was one morning where, Eric, you got up earlier than me to go to breakfast. I was like, I'm going to try and sleep for another 20 to 30 minutes and see if I can rest myself up a little bit more. 9 a.m. sharp, they started construction in the room next door.
Yeah. can we need to get this out here. In the entirety of Workbench Con, needs to air a grievance on how absolutely atrocious the breakfast scenario was.
Oh god! Oh,
yeah.
So to paint a picture,
breakfast every morning to get it better than that.
Yes, I would be happy to pay that $27 a plate for breakfast in the lobby. So to paint a picture for everybody at home, you walk into this big grand ballroom, and they have, you know, those. Yeah. Tired as hell because he's got 3 hours of sleep.
At the very least.
So you're like, I want something nice, warm, filling, maybe a little greasy. You walk in and they have those little, you know, like silver trays. And you're thinking, there's going to be like some bacon, some sausage, pancakes, maybe something like that. No. There is every fruit under the sun that you can think of. It's there. And so I'm like, all right, sweet. I'll get some fruit or whatever. And then you get to the end of the table and you're like, wait, I already got this fruit. And then you get to the end of the table and they have like miniature like scones or like pastries. And you're like, I don't want any of that. You're like, all right, I'm going to go find the table that's got like the potatoes or the sausage or the powdered eggs.
I need some
nowhere
grease
to be found.
Yogurt.
Yeah, I need some like protein and grease to fight this hangover.
Yeah,
and
Go ahead.
I was gonna say it's especially insulting because all the pastries were like Halloween candy size. They're like little teeny tiny,
fun size.
Like one bite croissant.
You're absolutely right. It was like a Tim Hortons Timbit.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, nice Canadian reference. I like that. Yeah.
And people were just like, what the hell? Like looking around. And then, so then surely the next day, right? You wake up and you're like, okay, that had to have been a one day thing.
No, that was a horrible prank the first day.
The second day was the same damn thing.
Same thing.
And then the lunch was at least hot. It had a variety of options, but it was the most ridiculous mismatch of culinary escapades. Like, oh.
Yeah. I would also be okay with them being like, hey, it's $100 cheaper this year, but there's no meals included or something like that.
Sure.
I could work my way around that.
And I mean, what was it, the first or second day, there was a group of 5 or 10 of us that we went to go in to get lunch, and we couldn't find a seat anywhere.
Yeah,
we sat on the stage and stood in the middle of the ballroom. But it's, so we air these grievances because there are grievances to be aired. But overall, the event was incredible, as it always is.
Derek, what do you think your favorite class was? What did you take away the most from?
I think it was actually kind of, there were two classes that informed each other really well. And what I am my general takeaway from, there was a class on content creating with YouTube, and then there was the AI class, and they both talked about using AI to help generate your content in different ways. And I found that very informative and helpful. Like being able, I didn't know that I could drop my YouTube video into Gemini and it would give me a description of that video.
Does that work?
That does. As long as it's a public video.
Ooh, that's not try that.
And it's not that you're using that to just not do any work. It's kind of like, no. You might be like, hey, give me an outline for this video. And then you like add your own stuff. And it's almost like an assistant, I think, is a better way to look at it.
Yeah. Because I'm horrible at doing an outline or being self-descriptive. So it really helps to have that outside perspective to give you a structure, like you said.
Yeah. Totally makes sense.
Interesting. I'm gonna try that thing with Gemini because I didn't know. I have heard that you couldn't do that with ChatGPT because ChatGPT can't access the internet. But if Gemini can access the internet, that's
and you
very
can
cool.
tell it to analyze the video and then give you a description in the host's voice. Ooh. So it's not as robotic. It'll use like your words and your phrasing and stuff.
Very you ever cool. heard Zach talk? He sounds like a robot.
That's right.
Zach, what
I
was your
hard
favorite
on that class? Monotone drawl.
What was your favorite class, Zach?
That's a good question. Well, I think one of my favorite classes, even though it wasn't really geared to me, was the one by Michael Builds.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the name of it was.
20 tips for better videos or something, I think.
Yeah.
That was a good one too.
I wish I saw that video. If not last year, then the year before that, it would have been of so much value to me. I think the last 3 or 4 tips that he offered were things that Eric and I stayed up late last year talking about. Like all that stuff about the retention graph and all these little details pertaining to that was hugely helpful. And it's like kind of the things that you don't really get anywhere. No, I haven't seen any other advice about, you know, how to start a YouTube channel in 2024 or 2023. Nobody was talking about that stuff.
No.
It's like really, really key insights that are very useful.
Yeah. I like that class.
Yeah.
So for me, I have a longer answer. And so, Zach, I know you'll probably resonate with this as well because we were chatting about it a little bit. So when we first walked in, we were like, oh yeah, we'll check out some classes. We kind of looked at the schedule, and on Fridays we were like, man, I don't know. And then throughout the day, like I was having these conversations with all these people about like, you know, just about their business, how they're running things in general. And I was getting like really overwhelmed. I was like, holy smokes, like these people are operating on like a totally different level than me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, but we haven't even gone to any classes today. And then we went to Michael Alm's class at the end of Friday.
Oh, yeah. That was
and there was a pretty good open discussion in that class about people like, you know, really going into details about their branding and all this kind of stuff. And then it kind of like, I had to like check myself. And I think that's a conversation that we had that night of like, man, I need to check myself. And like, okay, so things are going pretty well, but like you can always improve and always learn from anyone you're talking to. The next day we hit every single class session that we could. Yeah. And I felt like I got so much more out of the event on Friday so much more out of the event on Saturday than I did on Friday. And it was 100% my own doing.
Yeah. I think it's in this, our kind of world, it's easy to let your ego run away from you a little bit.
Yeah.
When the business is going well, you're like, I got this, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are watching me do my, it's very easy for your ego to get away from you and to just sit down, like check yourself or humble yourself for a minute and be like, no, there's something I can learn from every single person in this room. I'm not too good to go to this class just because my last video did well. You're not the master of social media just because, you know, you happen to have been doing pretty well lately. So
yeah, that's exactly how I would summarize it is.
Yeah.
Not a single person there is too good to not attend the classes. And it's not me talking shit on people who decided, oh, there we go. There's explicit. It's not me talking poorly about people who decided not to go to the classes. For me personally, I need to make sure that I force myself to go to the classes, because even in the ones where I'm like, okay, like I don't necessarily need to do this one, I would come out of the hour-long class, maybe with not an hour's worth of knowledge, but one or two nuggets or something that made me really, they're thought-provoking and made me think like, huh, I never thought of it that way. And to me, that's worth being in the class for an hour.
And, you know, like sometimes, yes, you do have to sit there and hear 10 things you already knew in order to get one of those nuggets. But that's not even bad. Like sometimes it's good to just go get a reminder of some of these mistakes.
So, for sure.
Yeah. Or yeah. Like Michael Builds in his class, he had a whole section on J cuts and L cuts. And I was sitting there thinking about it as like, you know what? I've been lazy about doing those lately. I know the strategic, you know, the impact that those can have in making a video flow better, but I've kind of just not been doing it lately. And then I watched his examples and I was like, that does seem like a much better transition. I should do that more often.
Yeah. And it's a 2-minute reminder. It just flags up in your brain and you go, I need to make sure I'm doing that.
Yeah.
It's just, I feel like I walked out this year with not as many like overarching monumental things, but more small nuggets, small tweaks, small thoughts that I think are going to be highly impactful rather than anything just like monumental. Like I think last year, the biggest thing that we walked out with was, oh my God, I need to really look at the retention graphs on videos and really understanding. That was huge. We spent hours each night looking at each other's like retention graphs and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, to much success. Like after I took away the things I learned in that workbench, like my retention graphs have been so much flatter.
Yeah. Since
last workbench con, because like I learned, I was like, people don't want long intros. Okay, cut that out. People don't want long intros. Okay, cut that out. Cut out all the useless bits in the middle.
Right.
And yeah. Right. So it's interesting. So. Derek, is there any, you think it was the AI stuff was the biggest thing that you took away from Workbench this year? Like the biggest lesson?
That's a great tool to utilize for sure. I know sitting in the airport waiting for my flight, I went ahead and dropped my two videos into it and had it spit me out a description. And I did that several different times, just kind of like tweaking how I was asking it to do that for me. And I was able to rewrite my description and dropped it in there. I mean, I didn't see much improvement on it, but it was, it definitely reads better than what I had put in there.
Huh.
And then the other thing I think I took away from all of it was deep links. I had never heard of deep links before, but I know we're all like taken aback by that one.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
Let's get let's get deep on deep links. So this was a concept that was introduced to us by Clayton, the Weekend Builder, I believe is his handle on Instagram.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah.
And so
very he gets all the credit.
And yeah, he gets all the credit.
I'll let you continue, but I have to say, when Clayton spoke up, it was during Michael Alm's class. No, it was it Michael Alm's no, class it
was,
or was it?
No, I think it was,
it was the big one with
Cam, Sam, John, and Brad's class, right?
Yes, yes.
He blew that entire auditorium's mind when he brought that up.
Every single person, even all five people or four people on stage were like, what's a deep link?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, go ahead. I wanted to throw that in there.
So basically, a deep link is a link that has been optimized for any affiliate program to log in natively on whatever platform you're using. So, okay, so the example is somebody goes to Eric's YouTube video. They say, hey, I really want to buy that saw that Eric's using. They go to the video description. They click the link because Eric is smart. He has a little affiliate link there where he's going to get 1% or 2% kickback on whatever whatever purchases are made through it. That person clicks the link, and if they're on their phone, it opens up in a browser window on Amazon, let's say. But it's a new session, so that person is not logged in. And now, all of a sudden, that person's like, oh, I got to sign in. Maybe, you know what, I think I'll just put this aside and I'll do it later. I'll search for it on Amazon when I get home.
Right.
It's just that little tiny bit of friction. So what a deep link does is ensure that it opens, if you're on mobile, it opens in the Amazon app on your phone so that you're already logged in. You can add it to the cart right away and you make sure that Eric gets credit for that sale. So Clayton was saying to us that he implemented that one little tweak and his affiliate revenue doubled after doing it.
I believe it. I'm surprised it didn't go higher.
Do you know, like, friction is, like, so underrated. Just, like, any little roadblock between somebody making a choice and not making a choice is, like, the odds of them actually going through with the choice is, like, cut in half, essentially.
I was reading, and similar to, like, being signed in, I was reading an article, I think it was on the way home, about how Shopify stores have a statistically higher checkout rate than most other platforms.
Yeah.
The reason why is, so most people probably don't know that they're on a Shopify website, which is a platform that you can host your website on. But if you've ever gone to this checkout and it says, would you like to use Shop Pay? And you're like, oh, I've checked out with a store that has Shop Pay. Literally all I have to do is it sends a little code to my phone. I just go like 1, 2, 3, auto populates everything, logs me in, puts the debit card that you used in last, and you're good to go. That's a Shopify store. So it's reducing friction, making it as easy as you put an item in your cart and it's so easy for you to check out. That's the same thing as that this deep link does, but basically for affiliate links.
Yes. Yeah. So it's all just about trimming down that that friction as low as possible. Weren't you saying, Eric, that after you redesigned your website, your planned sales went up?
It almost tripled.
Right. Because now all of a sudden, instead of having to jump through three or four hurdles in order to check out, you now have the Shopify thing.
Yeah.
Where it's a super streamlined process. And that's the thing. I think people underrate that. They're like, oh, somebody makes the decision that they're watching one of your videos and they want to buy your plans. And thus, they are going to buy your plan. But there's actually like five or six micro decisions that get made between that choice. And if any one of them goes wrong, or if there's a little too much pushback on any single one of them, then they'll just opt out. And it's kind of interesting.
It's there's a science behind it.
Yeah, definitely. That would actually be a really interesting field of study. Like, can you imagine being on the team at Shopify that has to design a checkout process that's as streamlined as possible? And like what little tweaks they could make?
I mean, Amazon does it. That's the
one click checkout.
Yeah. So it's like add to cart and then, what does it say buy now or is it one click checkout or something?
Yeah.
Buy now.
So if you are signed in, you can press a button and it will take you instantly to the checkout screen where you can just thumbs up. There we go.
Thumbs up.
I hate these stupid bubbles that pop up.
You must be able to disable it at a system level or something on your
computer. I hope so. Yeah. I hope. And we've talked about it. It's just stupid emojis that come up on the MacBooks. But as soon as you can just hit buy it now, and it instantly spits into your, you're in the checkout screen. Yeah. You just made it so easy for somebody to impulse.
Yes. It's all about that impulse purchase.
Right. Yeah. And
it's why you ever go to a
website that they're like, they don't tell you what the price is. They're like, call or inquire for a price. I am never buying anything from that website.
It's why they have all the very high margin, low cost items at the checkout at all of your favorite stores. Yeah. Like, think about a lot of stores make you walk through a little maze in order to get to the cash register. Yeah. And it's just stocked with stuff that they know is cheap enough that it's an impulse purchase. And it's also their highest margin items.
Yeah.
Because they're hoping that you're just going to grab it on the way.
Gum, headphones, magazines, like.
Exactly.
It's all there.
Exactly.
The other thing that I took away this year, and I mean this in the absolute most respectful way in the world, and you'll get what I mean, mm-hmm. is there is a handful of people that we all look at on social media and think these people are just winging it, just doing whatever. They can make anything in the world, and how does their stuff just do so well? It doesn't even look like they tried. I had conversations with all of those people this weekend. And dude, when you get to talk to these folks, you're like, holy shit. Yeah. These people's brains and like business acumen is operating on a completely different level. And that they're giving off the illusion that it's very casual, but there is nothing casual about what these people are doing.
Yeah, I would. I mean, maybe it's true in other fields, but if you're watching any big content creators, especially on YouTube, and to a large extent Instagram too, like if you're seeing anybody who's super successful, it's not luck. It's a result of a lot of practice and a lot of planning and a lot of hard work.
Right. Working their ass off. And I think I got a new respect for a lot of these people. Not that I didn't respect them before, but I'm like, okay.
Yeah. The trick is to make it look easy and effortless and casual. That's where the magic is. But that takes planning. It's the exact opposite of casual in the background or behind the scenes, I guess I should say.
Yeah. And the other thing I noticed is that every single person has people in their lives, other creators that they bounce ideas off of, and no one is doing this alone. Yeah. No one can do this alone. You need some sort of sounding board.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about Workbench. And I wonder if it exists in other niches. Because like we're all there and we're all kind of in this woodworking, building, DIY kind of space.
Yeah.
But what about people who are in the cooking space? Do they have a conference where they get together and share tips about what's working for making food videos?
I imagine they do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had never heard food of Workbench call. Yeah, I'd never heard about Workbench Con until I got into it, so maybe there is.
Yeah, I don't know. But I just think it's so freaking cool that our space is, you can just call somebody up or text them and be like, hey, I got this idea. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah.
And everyone's happy to help you out.
Yeah. Yeah, which is odd because if you wanted to be like if you wanted to do the technically business optimal thing, you'd be like, F off. I figured it out. Like, figure it out for yourself.
Right.
Right. Right. Because, right. Yeah, like, yeah. Why would you give up? Well, that'd be like Coke telling RC Cola how to brew their soda better.
But isn't there some, you read more business stuff than I do, isn't there some like word or phrase for like businesses basically giving their secrets to other businesses and it being mutually beneficial to one another? Isn't that like in the research space or like the, I can't think of anything.
Well, there's like crowdsourcing and stuff like that, but I don't think that's what they're talking about. Yeah,
kind of similar to that. But it's like where like one company spills their secrets to another and then they both share it and then they mutually grow way faster and quicker.
Beneficial agreement?
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But there's some word that I've heard before that's, it's really interesting. It's like, you know, if both of these people have some secret and if they share the secret now, instead of making a 10% improvement, they're making like a 400% improvement.
Interesting. Interesting. Interesting.
But that's kind of how I feel about WorkbenchCon. Like everyone's sharing stuff with one another and you get a lot of info.
Yes. You get a lot of info. And you also have to sometimes ask for it. And that's a little scary. And I think, you know, if there's anybody listening and they're thinking about going to WorkbenchCon, and you go, just know that people are very open and very willing to discuss things. Do not be afraid to go up to somebody and like ask them some details about their business.
No. Because people, people like to talk about themselves. Let's be honest. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So if you go up to somebody and say, what's been the most successful thing you've done in your business this year? Everyone is going to want to answer that question.
Yeah.
Because they're excited about it.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, I'm trying this new thing and I absolutely love it. And you're like, you know, it's,
right.
There's like excitement about it. I can't wait to start talking about it.
Right. It's you get out of it what you put into it. And as all of us being introverted folks, it's a lot of effort to go up to somebody, introduce yourself to them, and then have a very meaningful, insightful conversation for 14 to 18 hours, 3 days straight.
Yeah, that's why you disappear to the hotel room for 20 minutes and just sit on the bed and stare at the ceiling.
It is exhausting.
Or the bathroom like Eric.
Or the bathroom like Eric.
Oh, there are times where I'd just be chatting with people and be like, I'll be right back. I'm going to the bathroom. Yeah. And I would just go in the bathroom and just like stand there for 5 or 10 minutes. I mean, I had to go to the bathroom, but also like, I just need to take a breather.
Yeah.
That's why there's a couch in there.
Is there a couch in the bathroom?
There's a couch in there?
There was a couch in the bathroom down in the lobby.
Oh, there was in the downstairs bathroom. Yeah, you know, it was like fun.
Wing chair.
I don't trust the couch bathroom.
That's the dirtiest couch you've ever seen. Oh, yeah.
Well, don't go face down in it, but you know.
No, but there's gases and stuff in that room. I wouldn't trust that.
You know what? The other thing that I learned this weekend, I had no idea there were so many woodworking space podcasts.
Oh God!
Yeah,
yes.
we got some competition.
I had no idea. Whatever they are, they're better than the green suiters.
That's true.
Well, yeah, it goes without saying.
So who's somebody new in the space that you met that you had never seen before that you were impressed by or you maybe want to call out?
Our buddy John Sexton of Biscuit Tree Woodworking.
Yeah,
I had seen his stuff pop up on YouTube here and there, and I'm typically not a person that watches the homepage or whatever, but I'd seen his stuff pop up all the damn time.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, hey, this guy's got to be doing something. But in my fault, never checked him out. And then we had a fantastic weekend with him. We went out to dinner with him at least once, maybe twice. And I'm just like, this guy's killing it. And he's only been on YouTube for like a year or so. Mm-hmm. So we had fantastic conversations. I think I can do a better job at market research and see what other people are doing. Check out new people. Yeah. See what's making them successful. And I think I can do a better job at studying the craft more.
Yes. Yes.
Because at the end of the day, that's what we're doing.
One thing I learned is that I should be more social with other creators in my space. I tend to, I talk to the two of you guys and, you know, like we'll have guests over and stuff like that. But outside of that, like I text with Scott Walsh on occasion. That's about it. And it's just comes like, I don't know. I think by nature, I'm such a shy person. I don't want to like, I don't want to bother Suman with this question about my,
I know.
My thumbnail or something like that. And I don't think people are bothered by it. I think that's just a weird thing I have in my head. So.
No, I agree. Yeah. And especially people that like you've already exchanged phone numbers with them, which means that they are very comfortable talking to you.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. 100%.
I think I was trying to get together. Oh, go ahead.
What's that?
I was going to say, if I could get together just once a month and do a dinner with local makers, I feel like that would just reinvigorate me every time.
Well, that's what, so I was at the airport with Scott Walsh and Danny from DIY Danny. Mm-hmm. And we're all kind of in the Toronto area. We're like, we should meet like once a quarter and just have a dinner, the three of us, and like chat about stuff.
So have you noticed, like, going into Workbench Con, like, Zach, I know things are going pretty well for you. Kano was doing pretty well and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But be honest, did you feel a little kind of just, like, stagnant a little bit?
How so? Like, in...
It's like, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, doing the same thing. You know, it's going
well. Yes. Yes.
Kind of like losing a little of the steam, a little bit of the energy, because that's definitely how I felt. I don't know about doing this next project and this and that. And now, dude, I'm pumped to work on my next thing.
I would say today I was pumped. Yesterday I was still a little bit. I was like, I am dead. But today I hit the ground running and was tackling stuff like crazy. Well, I always leave Workbench Con with like a few things that I'm like, oh yeah, like I can't wait to like implement this strategy, or I can't wait to try this tweak and stuff like that. So I'm definitely have some of that going on. It is very invigorating. You're right.
It just kind of gets you re-jazzed up about it, which I think everyone needs that, especially because like what we're doing is predominantly very anti-social. Like we're all alone doing this and not that. And then when you have, you know, you get together with a group full of folks and start talking about all this stuff, it kind of like gets you re-jazzed up again. Like,
very much.
I'm excited.
I mean, it's an anti-social industry because it's just you, a camera, your workshop, and then, you know, your office when you're editing. And that's like kind of like just rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. So
the irony of social media is that it's
anti-social. I know, right? I know. And the craziest thing is the more successful you get at it, the less of the social part you do. You're not responding to comments because it's out of scale. You can't keep track of, like, you're so focused on cranking out more content. You're not necessarily like talking to your peers and stuff like that. So, yeah.
You know what I thought was different about this year is in the past, I feel like the vibe, the sentiment was, get on everything, get on every platform, do this, do this, do that. And it seems like people are really hammering it down into doing one thing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then kind of spacing out. I mean, think of any large creator in our space other than about three or four. Yeah. They're all very well known on one platform and killing it, and then present on others.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I wish I would have realized that earlier, that I should just do one thing really well, then scale up. Because if you try to do all of them well, it's physically impossible for you to spread yourself that thin.
Yeah.
And you're doing yourself a disservice across so many different platforms, I think.
How the hell did so many, I feel like influencers like 3-4 years ago, or content creator, whatever you want to call it, you would see somebody on YouTube who was cranking out a YouTube video once a week. They would be posting on Instagram every day. They had a Facebook page. There were literally people, it seemed like, who were just everywhere at all times.
Teams.
Is yeah. It gotta be teams. Yeah, but even like kind of creators who were just starting out.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, if you talk
that
to...
I've seen, like...
Go ahead, Derek.
No, go ahead. I was going to say, everyone that I've seen like that, they've got like an entourage behind them usually. And I can imagine that they have some skin in the game as far as like behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, an editor or something like that.
Yeah. But I think even an editor, but you also need like a, almost like a manager person too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And... it's you need help is what basically what I've realized. And if that help is in the form of just people in the community that you have a sounding board, people you chat with, if it's you have an agent that helps you with all of your brand deals, if you have a company that syndicates, you know, your Facebook page and stuff like that, like we all need help. It's not possible for us to do all of this.
Yeah.
But
I think, yeah, I wonder also if it's this trend towards higher quality content.
I think you're right.
Because, you know, people are releasing 20-minute YouTube videos now, whereas maybe the zeitgeist a few years ago was 5 to 6 minute videos.
Oh, do you know how easy it would be for me to make a 5 minute video, YouTube video every week if no one else is making woodworking content?
Yeah. Well, I think part of the problem too is that like all that low-hanging fruit of here's how you apply polyurethane finish. And it's like literally just a tight 4 minute video that tells you everything you need to know. Like those are all gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no point in making one of those now. So you need to kind of think outside the box a little bit too.
Right. But, yeah. There's so many takeaways. And I, like day one, when we got to Workbench Con, I was like, oh man, like, am I past this conference?
Yeah.
And then once I kind of like checked myself, I was like, dude, what came to my mind was like thinking of myself in like a sports strata. So hear me out.
Okay.
You have like your pro players. There's a stupid thumbnail or thumbs up going on. You got your pro players, right? You got your professionals, you got your all-stars. I am not in the major leagues as far as woodworking content creation goes. I would consider myself
pro-am.
No, not even. I would consider myself the best, the high school all-star.
Oh,
I'm doing very well. But if you go 50 miles away, no one has any idea who you are.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, yeah.
So hey, it's like I might be crushing it. In my, what were you gonna say, Terry?
I think you're minor league. You're looking for your shot at the majors, but yeah, you're minor league. Yeah.
You'll give me minor.
You know
league.
That you know that that baseball team that's like kind of a joke on TikTok, the Savannah Bananas. Have you ever seen them?
No.
Yeah. They do like
I've seen the logo.
Yeah, they do like weird social media posts. It's like they have like comedic skits built into their baseball games. It's a very weird format, but that's where I think Eric's at.
There you go. Savannah Bananas.
It's a Savannah Banana.
Spensley Bananas.
But it's like, okay, so you can get to be a really, really, really good high school player. And if you settle and go, I'm good here.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay to stay at that level. But if you are eyeing the major leagues, you have to look what these other people are doing and just put endless amounts of work and effort into it to step up to the collegiate level, step up to the, you know, minor league level, step up to the major league level. And it's okay that you're not at that level, but you also can't expect yourself to get to that level without putting in just an ass load of work.
Yeah. I think that's very true.
And it's kind of, that's what I've been reflecting on is things are going well, but I can absolutely get to the next rung.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a lot of
work. And it's also, it's tricky too. Like you want to be targeting the rung that's like right above you. You don't want to say Like, I need to be doing everything that Brad Rodriguez from Fix This, Build That is doing. Because he's been doing it for 11 years. He's, you know, he's 10 rungs above you.
Right.
But, you know, you can look, okay, well, you know, maybe I could be like the All-Star on a college team next year. And then once you hit that level, think about the next one and blah, blah, blah.
Right. I think it's setting reasonable and attainable goals, not trying to go from this year to being the NFL Hall of Fame All-Star, you know, that's not happening.
Yeah.
I think once you leave your day job behind and you make it your full-time focus, you'll see those rungs coming faster and closer.
Agree.
Start progressing.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. It's kind of unfortunate that it's such a time-intensive job because it makes it really hard. And I think this is why so many people start, but they drop out before it ever becomes a full-time income for them, is because it demands not even so much time in terms of creating the content, but there's also all the learning that goes along with it. And, you know, if you're trying to squeeze that in between a full-time job and a family and all these other things, it's really tricky.
Yeah.
And all for no money until you get to a certain level.
Right. And was it Brad or John who had the talk where they were showing the pie charts of...
Yeah.
Was that John? I don't remember.
Well, they were both the same talk.
Well, I know they were both the same talk. I don't remember who shared it.
I think it was John. Who was talking.
Okay. So for everybody listening, basically what they would show is like year one, here was a sample six person. Grand. Yeah, and they would be like, oh, I made $6,000 or whatever in year one. And it would be like 95% of their revenue was from one single bucket. Mm-hmm. And then year two, it would be like 15 to 20,000. Yeah. And it would be like, oh, now they had three buckets. One was like 50%, one was like 30, and the other one's 20. And then year three, it was like $120,000, and it would be like 10 buckets, all of which were 10%. And they would show multiple case studies after case study. And, you know, you start to kind of reflect on your own. At least I reflected on myself, and I was like, yep, that looks about right.
Yeah.
It was totally. Like, year one, the wind blows. Yeah. And you now have zero revenue.
Yes. Yeah.
And I talked to a lot of other people that were like, those numbers aren't real. And I was like, they're very real.
Well,
I think not taking into account materials either.
Right. That would be top line. Yeah.
That was just top line. But I think, I think some of them were like, year one, the person made $60,000 from their, you know, social media thing. I don't know if that's necessarily realistic. I think it was like kind of like, you know, the first year they started taking it serious or something like that.
Yeah. I don't think it's just like today I'm going to start an Instagram and I'm going to make $20,000 a year the first year. I hope it happens.
I'm certainly there are people out there who have done that, but I don't think that's, and I think that's maybe why there was a little pushback, like, oh, those aren't real numbers.
Yeah. And it was absolutely not what I experienced, I'll tell you that. But yeah, once you started taking it seriously, the stratos of the, you know, one step, oh, now you get five steps up, now 15 steps up.
Yep.
Yeah. It scales. Yeah, it scales quickly.
Yeah.
That's the key. Take it seriously.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. But I think it was, I hope what people got out of that was, you know, it is attainable. Here's what's out there if you really dedicate yourself to it. And at the end of the day, this is a job.
Yeah. Like, you know what I'm always surprised by at Workbench Con is talking to people and asking them what they did previous to content creation.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've learned is that a lot of the top creators in our space were already very successful in another field.
Yeah.
And so to think that they were, you know, these were people who were maybe making multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars in their normal career, and they were still took the chance to, you know, throw that safety away to become content creators, to go into business for themselves.
But no one is successful in what they do by luck.
No, no.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, definitely not.
You might luck into getting a promotion and making a couple more bucks. But, I mean, if you really step back, you worked hard to get there. You might not see it that way, but...
I think there's, you know, there are elements of luck in everybody's journey at certain points. But I'm very fond of the expression that it takes years of work to be an overnight sensation.
Overnight success. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was humbling for me to be able to talk to all those folks.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to prime yourself for those opportunities. And once you're out there and you're getting your name out there, then you're going to have these lucky connections like, oh yeah, Eric introduced me to this guy and he gave me a great business idea and I sold 1 million units the first year with that business idea.
Right.
Like, yes, that's luck, but you also had to take the initiative to start. You had to establish the relationships. You had to build the capacity to have the business. All these things kind of lead into it. So
yeah,
build experience.
I really dislike when people say, you know, to be a YouTuber or content creator, you have to be very lucky. I don't think that's true at all. And I think it's very discouraging for people who potentially want to pursue this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, could you have an element to luck where you put out a video and this one just happens to hit the right thing in the algorithm?
100%. 100%. That happens all the time. Well, it's happened to me many times. Right. But to then be like, okay, that video was properly analyzed. That video was a success for this reason. And now I'm going to chase that lead and generate more success from it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a perfect example is if you look at someone's channel and they get 100 views on every video they put out, and then they have one that does 50 million.
Yeah.
Okay. There's probably a small element of luck to that, but also there was something that video did well. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was. It's not all luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the thing to, if they get that one video and they get 50 million views on it, and then they go back to getting 100 views, then yes, that was luck. Just to some degree, right?
Because I doubt that they're going to make some monumental shift on one piece of content and then go back and to the other. But
yes. Yeah.
Do you ever look back at old videos of yours that at the time you're like banging your head against the wall thinking, why isn't this video doing anything? And now you look at it and you go, dude, Eric, I can give you a laundry list of why nothing is happening with that video because it sucks.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%.
Hindsight's so easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, there was so many little lessons that you learn along the way that just makes your videos that much tighter and blah, blah. I had a hour-long conversation with Mark from Markable Woodworks today, and we were talking about, you know, all the things you can do to make a better video, and it's just like all these little micro lessons that I've learned over 3-4 years I've been doing this.
You know what I learned?
The longest.
What took the longest?
Kind of in the same vein what you were going to say, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think the thing that took the longest for me to learn personally. Is that the question? I think, this is something that I think Michael Ulm talked about in his talk, but like, you aren't the hero of your own videos.
Ooh,
that's cool. Ooh, yeah, I liked that talk.
Once I started realizing that I should be making videos for my audience, I had to consider their needs and wants above all else.
Mm-hmm.
It really, because there would be things that I would put in videos because I wanted them to be there. I thought they were like, you know, oh, it's a cool little detail. I can put this here. And it was like, they were very selfish reasons. And I think listening to him talk and over the last couple of years, it's like, think about what the audience wants, build the video that the audience will want to watch the whole way through and, you know, package it in a way that they will be able to easily understand it right away.
I believe the video that he, or I'm sorry, the book that he referenced, and I've actually read this book before, but I don't think, let me rephrase it. I've read this book before, but I think at the time that I read it, I extracted different information from it then than I would have now.
Mm-hmm.
And the book that he recommended was Story Brand by, I believe it's by Donald Miller, if I recall the name correctly.
It's definitely Story Brand. I don't know. I can't remember the author's name to save my life.
But yeah, it was when I read it like 3 years ago, it was an excellent book. I'm going to reread it again. It should be at like every library. It's a pretty popular book.
Get on Audible.
Yeah. We got to get an Audible sponsorship.
I know. I was talking, who was I talking to about that? I think maybe Scott Walsh or maybe DIY Danny about trying to get Audible. Because they used to do YouTube sponsorships like crazy and then they went away. So I was like, oh, I got to find out who their agency is and see if I can get that going.
I would take a super low payment if they gave me a lifetime membership.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I wonder if that's even a possibility. I'd do it for free if they gave me a lifetime.
I mean, what's it, 20 bucks a month or whatever?
Yeah, 20 bucks a month times...
Well, 250 bucks a year?
Times, I'm sure I'm going to do it until I'm dead, so...
So if they gave you... Nah.
Yeah.
I guess even if you say it's 10 years, you'd still want a little bit more money than that.
Well, what about 50 years? Would that work out then?
10 years would be $2,500. So $1,250 would be 50 years. You can make that happen. Right.
Yeah, I can make that happen.
Well, anyway, what makes the show happen is our returning top tier patrons and all of our other patrons.
That's right.
So huge shout out to our returning top tier patrons. We got Renee, aka the Goblin Spanker, Dan Armendariz, Josh at Freedom Workshop, Corey Duvall, and Dadu. Those are just some of the folks that are helping us keep the lights on this show because it's not free to do a podcast despite popular belief. And if you want to support the show and join us in the fight against the Green Suitors podcast, just have to head over to patreon.com/offthecutpodcast, get access to the after show, that $50 Cam Tools gift card that we give out every month, and all sorts of other things.
Hell yeah.
Should we head over to the after show?
We should.
Or was that right, we talk about all the dirt that we uncovered at
that's
Workbench Club?
Yeah, we're going to talk trash about those, all those secrets we learned and all the people we hated and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about Jason Bent.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe, all right. Maybe Ronnie, too. And the prank we pulled on Sedge when he didn't even realize.
I never saw, I barely saw Sedge.
Yeah, because Sedge goes to sleep at like 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
He wakes up at like 4 in the morning and goes to sleep at 7 o'clock. But
anyway,
everybody, thanks so much for tuning in. We will catch you next week, or we'll catch you over on the after show.
See ya.
See ya.